Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Kelly Hendricks. She's the Ranching with Wildlife Coordinator for Project Coyote, which is a great organization. Kelly and her husband, Dean, live and work on a cattle ranch in Sonoma County, where Dean has managed the cow-calf operation for over 25 years. She's a longtime volunteer with Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue, where she fosters orphan wildlife and also serves as the VP of Little Trooper Ranch, a nonprofit animal rescue. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
So what can you characterize? Well, I'm going to back up. So when I was in my 20s, I lived in northeastern Nevada. And I knew some ranchers, a big ranching territory. I knew some ranchers who would routinely either shoot at or poison every coyote they saw. And can you comment on the sort of general state of predator slash rancher relations and go the spectrum from those who really hate them to those who live with them?
Well, the spectrum is pretty wide, but there are some people, and much like the ones you described, that, you know, their grandpappy shot coyotes, and that's the way it's done, and so that's what they do, and they do it just because that's the way it's always been done. So they just think of, if you see a coyote, you shoot it. And then there's the people that really, really hate coyotes for whatever reason, almost to a... It's almost sociopathic, and there's just horrible website or horrible Facebook pages. I think some of them have been taken down. We're hunters, you know, I guess they call themselves hunters, but just decimate them. And that's those people, reaching them is probably out of the realm of reality. They're probably going to go to their grave with that kind of hatred. And then there's the ranchers that just want to save their livestock. They just don't want to have problems. And if they have to shoot coyotes, they will. If they feel they have to, they will. And then there's predator-friendly ranchers that actively work with wildlife, especially predators, to coexist on the landscape. So... it's a little more of an enlightened view. And luckily, I think there's more and more ranchers like that on the landscape than there used to be. Like you said, it just used to be a wholesale slaughter of them. And throughout the years, you know, historically, we have just thought of predators as being varmints to exterminate. And I think that we're finally starting to see that they have real ecological roles that are really important. And then in fact, that they can help ranchers keep their pastures healthier. And I think we're starting to get some amount of realization of the important roles they play on the landscape.
So do you want, in this interview, do you want to focus on coyotes or do you want to talk about other predators too?
We could talk about other predators too. I'm really into coexisting with all wildlife. And in fact, with my work with Project Coyote, I do tons of education and outreach with communities and people and ranchers and all kinds of things. Different stakeholders to try to get them to coexist with all wildlife. So my work with Sonoma County, where I'm fostering wildlife, I foster raccoons and squirrels and all kinds of animals. And it's really given me a huge appreciation for the importance of all these animals in our world and how difficult their lives are and how difficult we make their lives. It's can be really, really heartbreaking at times to, you know, most of the animals we get in are there just because of human causes.
So, and thank you for that. And in a little while, I would like to talk about some of the ecological roles played by some of the different predators. But for now, can we talk a little bit about predator and livestock. And I'm wondering, without underplaying it and without overplaying it, what is the actual threat posed by different predators to livestock? Like a badger, a rancher doesn't have to worry about a badger, right? And then I know that wolves can kill cows, but the numbers are actually pretty small. Are coyotes even capable of killing an adult cow? What is the perceived or actual threat for some of the different predators?
Well, the actual threat of or the actual amount of livestock losses from predators is pretty low. I mean, there's a lot of things that are definitely take a bigger toll on livestock losses, which is disease, weather-related things, birthing complications, things like that. Actually, you know, take a lot more livestock than all predators combined. But and in fact, I was in a vertebrate pest conference, and one of the presentations was about, I think, you know, wolves returning to California and what their effect will be on livestock. But they had a slide up, and one of the slides was showing the different levels of predation by different species. And one of the losses said human to sheep. And it was one of the biggest ones. I think coyotes was like 16% loss by coyotes, they said. And then one said 22% human. I'm like, well, what's that one? They said theft. So in California, and this was a report given by livestock producers themselves on their losses. So in California, losses from human theft is bigger on sheep than losses from coyotes. So the perceived threat, and in individual producers, depending on where they are, or, you know, the predator load where they are, anything like that can have bigger losses, or if, you know, their husbandry plays a big role in it too, how many non-lethal tools you have working for you, how you take care of your livestock, things like that can have a big result on whether you're going to sustain a lot of losses or not. So individual producers can have bigger losses than the national average, whereas some can have much lower. And a lot of that is within our control.
I want to get to that in a second. So far as human losses, I used to know some people back 30 years ago who were fairly old when I knew them. And then when they were younger, they were very poor. And honestly, I mean, I guess they would have been hanged in a different time, because they used to support their families or feed their families by poaching cattle off national forests. And I'm sure that happens a lot more than, as you just said, a lot more than wolves or coyotes.
Yeah, I didn't know actually that human theft on sheep was such a big deal, because we don't raise sheep, we raise cattle. But I was kind of shocked. I thought that was pretty high. I thought, well, maybe we should worry more about the humans than the coyotes, if that's the case. But yeah, I'm sure nowadays it's less about, you know, feeding their families, and it is just about making money. But yeah. And, you know, coyotes with adult cows are rarely a threat, even though some ranchers will tell, every now and then you hear a rancher saying, and I've heard this story from a zillion ranchers, and we've calved out thousands and thousands of calves, and I've never seen anything like this happen, but it's become this, like, rural legend of that coyotes will, when a cow's calving, coyotes will come and eat the calf and then kill the cow and all this other horrible stuff. But cows are perfectly capable of getting up while they're calving. And I've never seen anything like that happen. And somehow that's become a story that gets passed from rancher to rancher. But coyotes are not a threat to adult cows. I mean, I can't say a coyote's never killed an adult cow, but that would be a big task.
Well, it would probably also be a really sick cow.
Sure.
How much does a cow weigh, and how much does a coyote weigh?
Well, coyotes in California average about 25 pounds, They look much bigger. People always tell me, oh, I sound, you know, saw a 50-pound coyote or 70-pound coyote, but they're constantly overestimated their size, you know, because you always hear, oh, they're the same size as a German Shepherd, but that's, you know, a German Shepherd's three times the size of a coyote. So a coyote's really about the size of a small border collie. But in the East, they're a little bit bigger. Like they average 35 pounds back East. But there's just really no 50-pound coyotes running around California. And cows, you know, they can get very, very big. But, you know, say an adult cow, your average adult cow is 1,000 pounds. The coyote's not going to bring that down.
Yeah, there's no way. So let's go ahead and jump into one of the main topics for today, which is you talk about non-lethal methods of controlling coyotes or keeping coyotes away from livestock. So let's say that there's a livestock owner who wants to a rancher who wants to make money off selling cows or sheep, and at the same time respects the natural world and recognizes that coyotes, you know, serve a role in nature. What could they do to keep the coyotes? We'll leave humans aside. What could they do to keep the coyotes from taking the sheep or some of the calves?
There's a ton of tools and things that you can do to protect your livestock. And the cool thing about non-lethal tools is that they're proactive, right? Like, so if you are using lethal controls to try to protect your livestock, you've already suffered a loss, right? Because that's usually when these tools are, you know, that's usually when you start killing them. And with non-lethal tools, you can prevent the conflicts before they occur. So, and the kind that you use will vary from rancher to rancher, depending on all kinds of things like the topography of your ranch to the kind of livestock you're raising to the amount of money you can spend, all kinds of things. But you can do things like, in our case, we're cattle ranchers. So we're not going to use fencing necessarily to exclude coyotes that like sheep ranchers, that is usually their first line of attack. We would do things like, it's a lot more like husbandry type things, like riding through the cattle more often, keeping, we'll bring in our first calf heifers, because the older cows, they get smart. They know how to protect their babies. If they go off to graze and they have a newborn, they leave it with some babysitter cows, they'll go off and graze, and that's how they work it out. But with first calf heifers, they're kind of, they don't often know these things, so they'll sometimes have a baby like right out in the field and leave it, and that can be a problem. So we'll bring those down to the barns to calve them out, and you know, we keep our more vulnerable animals in close to our barns and close to human activity, so that they're less likely to be predated on. And but you can use things like fencing, fox lights, which is a really cool product. It's it was designed by a sheep rancher in Australia to keep his sheep safe at night, because he knows every time when he would go out with a flashlight, foxes were a big problem for him. So when he'd go out with a flashlight patrolling the fields, it would prevent predation. So he developed this product, and it's random flashes of light that's on a dusk till dawn sensor, and you put it on a fence post, and it mimics the look of a person patrolling the field with a flashlight. So that will repel predators. You can do things like, coyotes are very neophobic, meaning they're scared of anything new in their environment. So even things like parking vehicles in new spots, or you know, putting lights up in an area where they weren't before. We use sometimes recommend talk radios on a dusk till dawn sensor. So it goes on, you just put the radio on a talk radio station. That helps repel predators. There's all sorts of flattery, which is these red flags on a wire that are spaced a little ways apart. And for some reason, it repels wolves and coyotes. And then there's turbo flattery, where you take that same idea, but you put a hot wire around it. So most of the ideas, you have to vary them with other ideas. You can't just take one tool and leave it out 365 days a year and hope that nothing habituates to it. Because eventually, if something doesn't harm an animal, they'll figure it out. But we always recommend people rotating their tools and to keep animals wary. And also, livestock guardian animals are a huge benefit. So you use dogs, llamas, and sometimes burros can all help protect livestock. Those are great, great option for some people. They take the dogs take some training, and you have to get them as puppies, so that makes it a little more difficult. But with llamas, if you go to somebody reputable and you find yourself a llama, you can put it right out there. It takes very little maintenance. It usually eats the same thing that sheep eat and doesn't take a lot of care. So there's a lot of different options. And now, if you go online, you can just get all this information about all these tools pretty easily. So that's a great resource to look into if you're trying to figure this out. And these days we found that, especially in places like California, that a lot of the problems are with hobby ranchers, like that, you know, people that move out to the country and then decide they want to get, you know, chickens or a few goats or something. A lot of the conflicts are happening with in those kind of situations rather than with the bigger ranchers, because these people, when they end up deciding that they're going to go move and then they decide they're going to get livestock, they really don't know anything about predators or not much about livestock. So it's a recipe for disaster. And in fact, now in California, we're not allowed to hunt mountain lions anymore, but we lose about 100 a year to depredation permits, which are issued by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. When if someone loses a backyard goat or something to a lion, they can ask for a permit and have the lion killed. So, you know, you were losing all these lions to someone that, you know, lost a backyard goat, which in those situations, it's super easy to protect the livestock because you can simply put them in a completely predator-proof enclosure at night. Whereas, you know, with bigger ranchers, commercial ranchers with bigger herds, it's some that can be cost prohibitive.
Yeah, there was a case that, I mean, this happens not infrequently, that there have been cases in, for example, Montana, where they have killed grizzly bears because the grizzly bears ate someone's backyard chickens. And that infuriates me, because you move to grizzly bear territory, you get some chickens for a hobby. And I've raised chickens before, and I love chickens. I just think they're delightful. But that doesn't alter the fact that grizzly bears are an endangered species. What I would think one would do would be to go, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful, I actually saw a grizzly bear.
Yeah, that's my thought exactly. It always blows me away when someone tells me, oh, we had, you know, spotted a lion on our property. I think, God, how lucky are you, you know? It's such a cool thing to know that they're on the landscape. It boggles my mind that somebody... My first reaction if we do lose an animal to predation is, what did I do wrong? Like, how can we prevent that in the future? But I think it's a real difficult thing as people when you lose an animal to you don't want to think that it's something you did. You know, I understand that. Like with these babies I get from the wildlife rescue to foster, if I lose one, the first thing I try to tell myself is, why wasn't this my fault? Like, what happened that this baby died that I didn't do? But the reality is, what I figured out is you have to look at it honestly and figure out if you did something to cause that or could have prevented it, because that's the only way you're going to prevent it from happening in the future, right? But it's heartbreaking to think that you did something that could have led to the death of your pet. But it doesn't make sense to blame a wild animal for being a wild animal. You know, I mean, if a human were left in that same situation, you had to support your family by, you know, eating those chickens, you would certainly eat the chickens. The grizzly bear is not looking at it knowing that those belong to somebody. It's just a food source. And I see it with chickens all the time. Everything eats chickens. And so even if they killed that grizzly bear for those chickens, something else is going to get them, right? Unless you have them properly contained. Well, whether it's a hawk or a coyote or a snake or a rat, you know, something's going to get them unless you have them properly housed.
Well, and eventually the humans are probably going to eat them.
Right, exactly.
And also, let's not feel, I mean, and once again, I raised chickens before, so, but let's not feel too bad for the chickens getting eaten by the grizzly bears, because you and I both know that chickens eat everything. So, I mean, chickens themselves eat lots of snakes, right, and lots of grasshoppers. So if we're going to feel bad for the chicken, we need to feel bad for the grasshopper and the snake too, that it's just life, right, you know, everybody's going to get eaten, yeah, in the end.
Right.
And one more thing I just want to say, I know this doesn't really have to do with the interview, but I don't live in coyote country now. Now I live in bear country, and the forest is too thick for coyotes. But when I did raise chickens, I lived in coyote country, and I lost plenty of chickens to it, and I also lost cats to it. And exactly what you said, when I never once thought, oh, I need to kill these coyotes. I would think, oh, I wouldn't mind if you disappeared for a second. I might get mad, but really, it was exactly what you said. What did I do wrong? Well, I let the cat out at night, and he got eaten. And
yeah,
well,
it's frustrating that that's not. It's hard to wrap your head around the fact that not everybody looks at it that way. You know, some people just want revenge, and that's what lethal control a lot of times boils down to, being just an act of revenge.
Let's go to the role of these various small predators in a moment. But before then, I just think it's so cool. Can you talk a little bit more about guardian animals? I've never done an interview on it. And can you go through more of the details, because I just think I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it is a pretty neat way to protect your livestock. So,
and it's been going, it's been going on for literally thousands of years.
Yeah, thousands of years.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
In Europe, it was a really often used to protect sheep. And we started figuring that out in the States. I don't know what year they started coming into the United States or we started practicing it, but certainly we were hundreds of years behind Europeans in that regard. But so dogs are, and there's several different breeds that you can use, you get them as puppies and you raise from a reputable breeder and you raise them with the livestock and they bond with them, and they'll protect them. So, and they can protect them from everything from, they'll protect lambs, let's say, everything from aerial predators to predators on the ground. So the advantages are that they're working 24/7 when you can't be there to help protect your livestock. And it's kind of a neat, pretty much eco-friendly way to do it. There are guardian dogs will probably kill a raccoon or something that ends up just wandering through the pasture. So in that regard, you know, it can have its downsides if it's predating on animals that may not be a threat to your livestock. But overall, it's much preferable to just a widespread slaughtering of large predators. So the downside of using livestock guardian dogs is that they have, you know, they take training. So you could have one, it takes a year before it can get out there and start protecting your livestock. You can't really buy a finished livestock guardian dog. So let's say you're having a problem today, you can't just run out and buy one and put it in your pasture. So that's kind of a downside. And, you know, they don't have a super long working life, you know, not like if you get a llama, that's got a longer working life, or a burro, but the dogs have a shorter working life. If you can get a good one and you're willing to put in the time to train it, it's a great tool. Unfortunately, not a lot of people are very good dog trainers, so that can be a problem too. But if you just get some instruction and find a good dog, it can really, really, really save you a lot of heartache. Same with the llamas and the burros. The llamas and the burros can be less reliable around a larger predator like a mountain lion or a wolf. But I have had people tell me that they've used llamas and in areas where other people were losing animals to lions and they hadn't. So, you know, you just never know. But it's definitely helpful against coyotes.
And how do the llamas work? I mean, do they just intimidate them by sight, or do they like go chase them and kick them or something?
Yeah, whereas like with the dogs bond with the sheep and they'll protect them because that's their family. With llamas, I think they just don't like dogs or canine type animals. So they will chase them, spit at them, you know, kick them, things like that. That is enough to intimidate a coyote. Will go looking for an easier meal somewhere. And the same with burros. They just don't like dog-like animals. But, you know, they're saying that they are all individuals. So you could get, you need to find ones that are known livestock protectors. You know what I mean? Or from a breeder that can tell you whether it's a good animal. And also with the llamas and the burros, you should get a trial. Like a reputable person selling those animals should give you a trial period to make sure that they'll work for you.
Well, thank you. That's really interesting. And for the record, right at my feet right now, I got a dog at the Humane Society maybe 3 or 4 months ago, old dog. And he's an Anatolian Shepherd, which is one of those guard breeds. And he's huge. He's 140 pounds. So even anything else, he is, almost 6 times the size of a coyote.
Yeah, and they're great dogs, too. And they'll even, you know, if they're started right, they'll even protect poultry, lambs, whatever. And that's pretty cool that you found it's a purebred Anatolian Shepherd you found at the Humane Society.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was a failed guardian dog, livestock guardian dog or something.
I don't know. He's 9 years old. So if he was a guardian dog at one point, he now is
long since retired.
Yeah. He's a speed bump at this point, which is just delightful.
I love when people adopt senior dogs. I think that's so cool.
Oh, I love it too. And frankly, I know this is off the topic, but I'm just going to make a plea here for people to adopt senior dogs. Because frankly, I mean, I have had puppies, and puppies are delightful little things for a little while. But I love old dogs. Old dogs are the best.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best. You get a puppy and they're super cute and fun. You always love them and they turn out to be great dogs or whatever. But you'll never find a person that doesn't go at one point, why the hell did I get a puppy? You know, they destroy so many things. It's such a hassle for so long. And, you know, the shelters, meanwhile, are full of these senior dogs that need homes. So
yep,
that's really great that you do that.
And what they want to do is sleep, which is pretty much my speed these days,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. And they're so grateful, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so take home point from that 3-minute public service announcement. Get old dogs at the shelter.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to – let's talk about the role of some of these predators in – actually, before that, I have one more question, which is you mentioned the myth of coyotes taking down adult cows, and I have a friend who works a lot with prairie dogs, and one of the myths having to do with prairie dogs is – two of the myths are that they destroy forage, but they actually improve forage, and the other is that cows and horses will break their legs in the holes, which doesn't – that's also a legend. So can you give some of the – a couple more myths or legends about – a couple more falsehoods, really, about predators that a lot of people think but just aren't true. Like another one you've already said is that coyotes are huge. I mean, I've lived with coyotes my whole life until I moved here, and I didn't know they were only 25 pounds. That's smaller than my mom's Sheltie.
Right. I mean, there are so many myths associated with predators. We could fill several hours on that. And also, like you said about the prairie dogs, another thing that's a thorn in my side is that they get a lot of things. Prairie dogs, in our case out here where we are, it's ground squirrels, are, like you said or mentioned earlier, badgers. People think that livestock's going to break their leg in it. I mean, it's one of those things you hear all the time. I can't think of a thing. And I was a horse trainer before, you know, I retired about 10 years ago and have had, you know, trained horses my whole life. I've never seen one incident. We've never seen one since it here with the cow where anything stepped in a hole and broken its leg. I can't say it's never happened, but it's a very, very slight chance. And in the meantime, these animals like prairie dogs, ground squirrels, badgers, their diggings actually aerate the soil. They keep it more drought resistant. They, you know, spread seeds to different areas to help, you know, germinate the soils. They provide shelter. Their burrows provide shelter for things like endangered burrowing owls and salamanders and all kinds of other animals. And but all people can say is, well, my cow's going to step in a hole and break its leg. I'm like, even if that ever has happened, the slight chance that that happens, you're now wiping out something that can provide all these benefits that you haven't considered. So, and with coyotes, there's so many myths people will tell me all the time. Another one is that I heard them howling. So I know there's like dozens. I know they're overpopulating because I hear dozens of them howling and they're killing things. But the truth is coyotes don't howl when they're killing things. It wouldn't even make sense because it would just draw in other predators. So they don't they vocalize that to find other family members. You know, because they spend a lot of their day apart, so they'll howl to find other family members. And they can play a trick with their voice. It's called the Beau Just effect, and where two coyotes can make themselves sound like a large pack. So, like at the wildlife rescue, we have two non-releasable coyotes, and sometimes we'll get them howling before people come up to the, you know, their enclosure and say, how many coyotes do you think that is? And I say, 10. Six, something like that, and they go up there and there's just two. So that always surprises people. And people, another one I hear all the time is that the coyotes will lure dogs to their death, you know, back to an awaiting pack to kill them. Like a female coyote will come out and lure like a male dog back to its pack, and then the pack will kill it. But there's absolutely no scientific evidence that anything like that ever occurs. But what does occur, and I see it all the time, is that off-leash dogs will chase coyotes, which they hate. And when coyote's running from a dog, it'll probably run back to where it knows its other pack members are. And they're going to treat that dog like a something that's invading their territory, and they may attack. So, but it's not a coordinated effort to lure a dog back so they can predate on them. It's, you know, no. But people often they often don't understand what's happening in the animal world. And then you interpret it in your own mind. And we always seem to pick the most scariest reason for that something is happening. And that's what we go with and we choose to believe. When in fact, it's, you know, often not the case. But there's so many myths surrounding coyotes and wolves too. And unfortunately, these beliefs tend to lead to animals being killed. Coyotes also follow people commonly as part of their normal behavior. If someone's walking through their territory, especially with a dog, they often follow them from a ways away. And people think that they're stalking them. And I walked in, a coyote was stalking us. But if a coyote really wanted to stalk you, to look at you as prey, they would be attacking, they would catch you because they're the second fastest land mammal in North America. So if all these coyotes were stalking people, there would certainly be a lot more attacks. But no, they just like to, we call it escorting. They just like to make sure that a possible threat is actually leaving their territory. So they'll sometimes follow from behind. And probably because they're just curious animals.
So I have to ask then, what's the fastest land mammal in North America?
The pronghorn.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. And a quick story. When I had the chickens, when I lived in Spokane, there were coyotes around. And one of my dogs used to, if he would see the coyotes, he was about the size of a Cocker Spaniel, but he was a mix. Anyway, he would start running at the coyotes. This happened maybe once every 2 months. He would do exactly what you said, charge at the coyotes. The coyotes would lope away, as you're saying, and then he would catch them, and then there would be a quick cloud of dust where I couldn't see what was happening, and then my dog would run as fast as he could back to the house, and then he would mope for a couple of days. And then about a month later, he would do the same thing where he would forget how they had beaten him up. And they never,
right,
they never
right.
hurt him. They just sent him home. It's like, don't, we will put up with you, but don't mess with us.
Right.
Anyway,
it's actually amazing how tolerant, it's just what we never appreciate is how tolerant wildlife is of us. You know, there's so many animals, especially in urban areas now, there's so much wildlife living around people. And the fact that they aren't attacking our pets all the time with more regularity is really astounding, because the conflicts are actually very minimal compared to, you know, the conflicts that animals, loose animals or, you know, cats that are roaming loose or dogs that are off leash come in. Much more problems with other dogs or cars and things like that than with coyotes. So they're really amazingly tolerant. And you know, in times like when they have dependent young, wildlife understandably can get a lot more defensive. And that's when we find the numbers of conflicts rising and people thinking that their animals are just being looked at as prey and attacked. And but coyotes, by and large, are really huge chickens. I mean, they're very fearful animals. In fact, at the wildlife rescue, when we get coyotes in, they're like deer. They just run the fence line, you know. And when we get them in for rehab, we're trying to get them better before we turn them back out. They'll just run that fence line like a deer. You can go right in with the wild coyotes and feed them and leave, and no coyote has ever even offered to come towards us that I've seen, that I've been around. And in fact, when they come in, we do wear gloves because, you know, you never know, but by and large, all you do is put a towel over their head and you can do just about anything to them. They're just so scared of people. They just freeze and get completely stiff. And so they're pretty easy to handle.
You know, this raises a hugely important issue, which is we're always told that we should make sure that non-humans never lose their fear of humans. And that's actually not the discussion I want to have. But I think the important thing is that we need to lose our fear of them. And
yes, that's a great way to put it.
We
exactly.
can, of course, not lose our respect for them. You know, I see bears every single day. And I'm not afraid of them. I respect them, and I respect the fact that they're 400 pounds, and if they chose, they could kill me. I respect that, but I'm not afraid of them. And there's a
right.
one of the reasons I think this is really important is because if I see a bear and I'm afraid it's going to disembowel me, that is a different response than if I see a bear and I'm afraid it's going to wreck my porch.
Mm-hmm.
One becomes
right.
one is a life and death. Like, I can see why someone would kill something, and the other is I'm not agreeing with it, but I can see why they would. And the other is just finding a way to proactively protect.
Exactly. That's the thing. There is a huge difference from being respect. People often say, "Oh, you just want the coyote haters will be like, oh, you just think everybody should be out there hugging coyotes and." And no, that's, completely missing the point. The point is that you can respect wildlife, or you can love wildlife and respect it enough to let it be wild, but not think that it needs to be removed because you're scared of it, the vast, vast majority, I am way more afraid of walking amongst, I'm not afraid of walking amongst people, but if I were to be afraid, like I'm much more comfortable around wild animals because I know that you're statistically, you're much more likely to be attacked by another human than a wild animal. Why would I be afraid of a wild animal? Yet, you know, people hear these stories about people getting attacked by wildlife, but these become news stories just because it's so rare that it happens. That's why they're news stories. So, but it becomes into people's consciousness and it makes them think these things are happening all the time or that wild animals are dangerous. And they're much more predictable than, or that wild animals are unpredictable, but they're much more predictable than humans. If you ask me, wild animals usually act in very predictable ways. The only time that gets skewed is when they're fed by humans. So that becomes a huge problem if you've got people that are feeding either intentionally or unintentionally. As you know, with bears, that's a common problem that that can change their behavior significantly. But, you know, regular wildlife is not certainly nothing to be afraid of now.
So we haven't had a chance to talk about the roles that these various predators play in their natural communities. So can you talk about that for a couple minutes?
Yeah, they've predators help, you know, really keep, first of all, they eat tons of animals like coyotes eat tons of mice and rodents and voles and gophers, a lot of things that people really hate. So in fact, there was I can't remember. I think it was in the 1920s in Kern County, California. The Wildlife Services or whoever at that point was in charge from a federal level came and wiped out all the predators because they were, you know, losing livestock in that area in Kern County. And I mean, they wiped out everything. They shot eagles and hawks and took out all the coyotes, everything they could. They just, you know, decimated the predator situation there. And they had a huge boon on rodents. In fact, there's a museum there in the dedicated to this. It's called the Great Rodent Infestation of, you know, so within a couple of years after that, they just had a huge, there were so many rodents that, you know, you couldn't drive down the road without running them over. They invaded all the homes and everything else because of this widespread predator removal. That's a drastic example of what can happen when you when you don't respect the role that they play ecologically, but it certainly can affect things. In studies they've done where they've removed coyotes, they've shown huge boons of rabbit populations and other kind of populations that make the whole environment unhealthy and actually are bad for livestock. So they play an incredibly important role. And I think, you know, most people that don't know a lot about livestock, they have at least heard about, you know, the difference that wolves made in Yellowstone as another example of the trophic cascades and how the wolves in Yellowstone have caused the elk to move, be on the move more and more cautious so that they're not grazing down all the foliage. And it's keeping the streams healthier and allowing the, you know, beaver to return, and it's better for the fish and the plants and everything else. So they have major effects, positive effects all up the ecosystem.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and there's two areas I would like for you to talk about. The first one is we haven't really talked about your work either for the county or for Little Trooper. Can you talk about, I've never interviewed somebody having to do with animal rescue. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch on that? And then the last question will be, can you talk for just a second about Project Coyote?
Sure, yeah. Well, the work I do at Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue, we're a licensed wildlife rescue with California. And so we rehab all sorts of injured and orphaned wildlife, all native wildlife within Sonoma County. And what I'm doing, I've worked in the hospital there. I've worked feeding animals there. And now I concentrate solely on fostering. Last year, I think I fostered almost 60 babies. This year, right now, I think I have 9 raccoons. So this is the lowest I've been all baby season. So for several months of the year during baby season, I'll be swamped with raising babies for them. And most of our patients, over 90%, are come into care specifically because of human-related causes, you know. And Little Trooper Ranch is a new nonprofit, and we take in mostly dogs that are ones like you're talking about, ones that are older or, you know, less seen by the public. So, and get them adopted out into good homes. So, yeah, so a lot of great organizations.
So can you can you give a couple of your favorite wildlife rehabilitation stories?
Oh gosh, there's so of the fostering. It can be heartbreaking work, but on the other hand, it's so gratifying when you have raised these babies since they were very little, and you get to release them out into the wild. I've released, you know, ground squirrels here, and then I've released ground squirrels that I've here on the ranch, and I've got to see them actually later, you know, out there being ground squirrels. And there's just no greater feeling than knowing that you did something that saved that life and let it, you know, here this animal is impacted by something that humans did. And it righted a little bit of a wrong to see them back out on the landscape doing their job. Oh, and I forgot to mention the work we do with Project Coyote, which is it's an incredible organization. I really encourage anybody to go to our website, projectcoyote.org. We do tons of work, everything from educating the public about coexisting with wildlife to working with state and federal wildlife agencies, because traditionally and historically, these predators have been treated as vermin, and our state wildlife agencies are often just run by hunters and consumptive interests and ranchers. And so we're trying to be a voice to help offset some of the horrible policies that are in place and, you know, develop new modern wildlife agencies that actually appreciate the predator's role on our ecosystem. Because like right now in most states, coyotes are completely unprotected and can be hunted 365 days a year and killed in almost any way imaginable. So we're getting things like that changed.
Well, that's great. Is there anything else you want to say about either coexisting with wildlife or Project Coyote or the rescue work?
I would like to say that if our knee-jerk reaction often when we're dealing with wildlife is to fear it, as you mentioned, or just want it to see, you know, you don't want it to be a problem, so you think it needs to be removed off the landscape. And it's really important to understand the unintended consequences that come with that, whether it's just a raccoon that's under your house that you think needs to go or whatever, that there's always ways with a little bit of research or, you know, just reaching out to experts, there's always ways to mitigate these problems. And they're often more sustainable solutions and better for the environment and for yourself. So you can do it with a clear conscience, and it really helps you learn more about these animals and appreciate them more.
Well, thank you so much for all of that, and thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Kelly Hendricks. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.